colleagues, welcome back to the office. Welcome to our podcast for today. Welcome to Excel's Best New Features, Part 2. In this class, we are looking at some of the best new and compelling features for Microsoft Excel. Excel is this application that we all know and love. It is something that is the backbone of pretty much every business out there today. I can't think of an organization that is not meaningfully using spreadsheets in some material way inside their organization, from everything from such as budgets and forecasts to maybe even a full-blown accounting system or certainly just ad hoc analysis. But it is a major dependency of every company. Well, good news is with Excel, it continuously is upgraded and improved upon. Microsoft releases a major new version every couple of years, and with the advent of 365, it's only gotten better. There are all these new features that we could be using to improve our way of doing spreadsheets inside of our company. Well, in this series, we look at all the new stuff that's been coming out. And new is kind of a relative term. You know, most people, for example, will start utilizing a feature of Excel maybe 2 to 3 years after it's been featured. But I really try to highlight the stuff that maybe you haven't seen or utilized just yet. So in today's class, we're going to go ahead and take a look at some functions as well as features. Functions are actual functions that we would write. And in this particular case, a function that we would write on our actual spreadsheet might be stock history, which is a fantastic way to be able to pull the market information for a particular stock over a period of time. And we'll talk about how we could use this to pull in financial data directly into our Excel workbook. Or we could talk about, and we will, dynamic array formulas, including sort, filter, and unique. These are some pretty cool features which will allow us to be able to take a list of data and be able to put it into a particular order through a formula. We've always been able to do this through the table functions and through the filter and sort features from the data tab of Excel, but now we could sort and filter and get unique values straight from a formula, which is pretty nifty. Okay. We're also going to take a look at XLOOKUP and see the most compelling way that we can do lookups inside of our spreadsheets. Lookups are often one of the most common things that we have to use inside of Excel, in the sense of like we've got a value and we need to go get something else back from another list. Maybe, for example, we've got an employee ID and we want to get the title or location or something else like that. Well, we've always had VLOOKUP, and a more powerful way of doing that would be index and match. Well, now we have XLOOKUP. With XLOOKUP, we can, for example, go and look up the more common anything that we would want to look up inside of a table or inside just a list of values inside of Excel and be able to pull up more information from that. And it brings all the features and functions and power of index and match with the ease of use of VLOOKUP. And it is the most compelling way of doing a lookup now inside of Excel. It's something that I would strongly recommend that everybody consider utilizing. So those are some of the features that we're going to look, or some of the functions that we're going to actually look up today. But we're also going to be looking up some features as well. For example, there's this new compelling feature inside of Excel called forecasting, and forecast ETS and forecast sheet. These are some really kind of cool ways to be able to do some forecasting, taking historical data and being able to project what could occur in the future. And we'll also look at some of the cool new 365 features and functions, including co-authoring, some of the unique values that we could potentially find inside of Excel that come as part of that 365 package. Alrighty, so before we get going, let's just go ahead and take a quick look at what we can do if we're looking to get credit. If you're a financial professional, if you're a CPA, if you're an enrolled agent or some sort of other professional that needs continuing education, well, guess what? You can get credit by listening to today's podcast. And it's super simple. After watching or listening to today's podcast, head on over to cpetoday.com, use course code EXB2, and you can earn a credit for watching or listening to today's podcast. So if you have to maintain your credits, and man, do they just kind of sneak up on you, this is an efficient and fast way to be able to do that. So again, cpetoday.com, your one-stop shop for all things K-12. continuing education for financial professionals. All righty. So let's go ahead, and we're going to be doing a pretty much a majority of our session for today inside of Excel. And let's just go ahead and get right to it and jump right into it and take a look at our first feature and function, which is utilizing forecasting. Alrighty. So I will remind you that if you are purchasing today's course, you get access to all of our materials for today. This comes with every purchase of a podcast. So you get not only a DRM free version of the actual podcast materials, but you also get copies of the sample materials that you can utilize for your own purposes. Okay. Now, one quick thing before we get going today that I do want to remind you of is you need to know what version of Excel you are using, as well as how you have acquired Excel. So if you're not sure, head on over here inside of Excel or really any of the Office applications. Come up here to the File menu. From the File menu, drop down here to Account. And from Account, what you're going to see is you're going to see what version of Office that you have. Okay, so you can see here, I'm licensed for 365 for Enterprise, which means I am on an E3 or an E5 license. Okay, the reason that's important to know is that there are certain features and functions that are going to be available whether or not you have 365, as well as whether or not you have the business version, the personal version, or the enterprise version of 365. Okay, the highest tier of the application is going to be that 365 for enterprise, which is what we have. That gets you access to the Pro Plus version of Excel, including the Inquire toolbar, as well as some additional features and functions for working with big sets of data, which are pretty nifty. So hopefully you've got 365 because things like, for example, the XLOOKUP features and functions, the stock history, and more are going to be dependent on having that version of Excel. Okay, so the other thing I want to draw your attention to is down here under About Excel. You'll see, for example, I'm running version 2106 with the specific build number. And then you'll also see what update channel I'm on. And right now I am on the current channel. Okay, hopefully you're within a couple of versions of mine, because some of the features and functions we're going to look at today are really going to be dependent on you running a relatively modern version of Excel that's relatively up to date as well. Okay, but hopefully you've got both of those, 365 at least, as well as a recent version of Excel. Alrighty, so for our first feature and function that we're going to look at today, we are going to be looking at the forecasting functions inside of Excel. Okay, now forecasting gives us the ability to be able to take historical data and be able to project what could occur into the future. And it uses a exponential smoothing model to be able to take this historical data and to give you kind of a sense, both in terms of historical performance as well as recent performance, to give you a sense of what could occur in the future for a particular range of data. This could be really useful, for example, for forecasting revenue or kind of forecasting expenses into the future. Now, there are two different ways of being able to do forecasting. We could do it through a formula-based approach, which is the forecast ETS function, and then we also have the forecast sheet. I'm going to go ahead and show you both of those here today. Okay, now the first approach we're going to look at is going to be this forecast ETS function, which can be really useful if you've got a range of data, as you can see over here, and maybe we programmatically and formulaically want to know kind of essentially what's going to happen, you know, in that future period. Now, for the forecast ETS function, we have three arguments, okay? We have the target date, and then we have the historical dates, and then we have the number value that we're going to go ahead and do the calculation on. So let's come on over here, and you can see in this range of data, I've got some month-by-month data going from 2018 to 2020. One of the cool things about this is that it'll take whatever data that you've got. But if we're talking statistics, best practices would tell us that we need to ensure a couple of things. First and foremost, that our data is accurate. Okay, it's relevant and it's recent. In the sense of, you know, bad data in gets you bad data out. And ideally, we want to ensure that the data that we're working with is relatively free of error, as well as up to date. One of the things that you should think about before doing a forecast is there a going concern? I mean, if we've got, for example, our monthly sales here, but there's a going concern to the organization that they're going to go out of business or the operations are going to materially change in the next period, well, what's the point of doing a forecast if the historical data is no longer going to be reflective of future operations? I would tell you that when you're doing this, you know, it needs to be kind of business as usual, and the data that you're working with has to be reflective of what could occur into the future. Okay, so saying that, it's going to use a mix of both old data and new data. It's going to take into account historically what has occurred in January, February, March for a future January, February, March prediction, as well as what happened in December, November, and October. So it kind of uses this black box model to look at both the same period and future in prior periods, same month or same date range, as well as what's most recently happened to this organization. So let's say we wanted to forecast out here to 2021. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and put in just our January 31st, 2021. And we're going to write the formula equals forecast ETS. And you'll see as we start to wipe through this, there is some examples of other formulas that we could choose to use. I will tell you that your tab key is going to be your best friend in this instance. And the auto completion of this is definitely going to make it easy for you to use. Okay, so we're going to just go ahead and hit the tab key here. And you'll see that we've got a minimum of 3 arguments with some additional optional arguments. Okay, so the first is going to be our target date. And since we're working with a table, one of the nice things about this is that I can just point it to that and it will use the table structured reference to tell me that, hey, current row date is what we're going to look at. Now, if you choose to use this out in the wild and you don't, for example, have a table set up, it would just be whatever the cellular reference of the item you're looking at. Okay, so current row of the date column. Okay, next there's going to be our prior values that we want to use. So this is just going to be values from B2 to B37. Okay. And I've got some rows hidden here that are representative of those prior periods. I just made it a little bit shorter just so we could see that we could see the start and the finish. Okay. The next thing we're going to go ahead and point it to our target dates. Sorry, our prior dates, our timeline here. And you can see here we got B2 to B37, A2 to A37. Just make sure that those are congruent. Now we have 3 additional arguments, and we'll talk a little bit more about these when we do the forecast sheet functionality here in a minute. But they are seasonality, data completion, and aggregation. In a nutshell, seasonality will detect whether or not this business is seasonal. Some businesses, for example, let's use retail, tend to be very seasonal with respect to what they do. And, you know, a company like Macy's or Nordstrom's is going to have a bigger November, December than they are like a July or August, for that matter. It could detect that. We also have data completion. What happens if we're missing data, you know, for a particular period? What happens if, for example, we're missing June or August? Well, we could use interpolation. We could use other statistical methods to kind of fill in the missing gaps. We also have aggregation. What happens if we've got more than one period data for that period? What do you want to use? The minimum, the maximum, or, you know, just kind of average them together or use them both? We'll come back to those a little bit later. Okay, so we're going to go ahead and use this value for our January 31st. And if we click this, we get a value of 1,920,222, which is the predicted outcome forecasting for January 31st, 2021. Let's go ahead and just do another one here. We'll say 02/28/2021. Okay. Now I'm going to copy this formula from above by just hitting Control D. Okay. And we can see here for February 28th, 2021, that is the prediction of revenue for February. So, again, as long as there's not a going concern, as long as the historical data is reflective of what's going to happen in the future, this is a great way of being able to, you know, get a fuzzy picture of what could occur into the future using a formula-based approach. Now, there's some other stuff around this, around statistics and around, like, for example, confidence intervals. You can adjust some of this, but with respect to the formula itself, it's a black box. You just kind of have to treat it the way it calculates, and it either works for you or it doesn't. Now, if you need more control over how the forecasting is done, you're going to want to use the forecast sheet functionality. Let's go ahead and switch over here and come to our second worksheet, forecast sheet. And this is the same data as before. Okay, so we have our historical data from 2018 coming all the way down to 2020. And so let's say, for example, I wanted to do a forecast of 2021 and see what's going to happen in this year. And I want to do it for not just like a date by date, but like for several dates. I want to do it maybe for a whole year worth of information. Well, what we can do is we can use the forecast sheet functionality. That's going to be over here under the data tab. And from the data tab on the right-hand side under the forecast work group, you'll see there's the forecast sheet button. So if we go ahead and we select our data, okay, ensuring that we're selecting the top, the header rows as well, we'll come over here and select the forecast sheet function. And we get, check this out, a really cool graph that will kind of show us from this historical data what the forecast could potentially look like. Okay, so a couple things. Let's go ahead and expand our options down here so that we can get a little bit more granular control over how the forecasting operates. Okay, so right now it is just going out roughly 10 periods. So going from January to October. Let's go ahead and extend this and going out to 12/31. There we go. Okay. Now, that will extend the period, and we can forecast as long as we wanted to. So instead of going to 12/31, maybe we want to go to 12/31/2022. We can go ahead and do that as well. Now, one of the things I want to draw your attention to before we kind of get further is forecasting is a imperfect science, and it's kind of a science, it's kind of an art. If you're working with data that you know, that you recognize, it's much more approachable, and I would say has a better amount of control than kind of unfamiliar data, because generally most people, especially with revenue data, can have a sense of historical performance and what it will look like in the future. The computer doesn't have that. And what I want you to draw your attention to are these lines. Notice we've got three lines, okay? You got a top line, a bottom line, and then a thick middle line, okay? That bottom line is what's called the lower bound, okay? Or the lower confidence rating. The upper line is the upper bound or the upper confidence rating, okay? And then that middle is kind of the forecast, which is kind of representative of, what's probably going to end up happening, okay? Notice I like to call them the alligator mouth, right? And notice the further we get from our historical data, the alligator mouth gets wider. And that's just because the further and further we get from historical information, the bigger guesses that we have to make. A lot of things can happen in 2 years. A business can go out of business. It could, for example, materially change in operations. It could open up a new business line. It could do a lot of different things. And so the further we get from our historical information, the wider those alligator mouths are going to get and the more things that could potentially happen. Okay, so generally, I would tell you with respect to forecasting, it's always best if it's within a year or so. A lot can happen within a year, but that's a lot better than if we were to forecast out 5 or 10 years. 10 years is going to be completely open at this point because who knows what happens in that. Okay, now one of the things we could do down here is we could adjust the confidence interval. The confidence interval is how likely something will fall within. And so we're saying, with this particular forecasting, this represents probably 95% of all cases, okay? If we increase this, notice the alligator mouth gets a little bit wider. At 99.99%, it's pretty wide here because this is representative of all possible circumstances. So if you wanted the widest possible circumstance, this would be increasing the confidence interval to increase the number of items in scope. Likewise, if we decrease our confidence interval and we say, we want something to be, let's say, 75% accurate or 75% within the, the realistic outcome, we decrease that. Notice that alligator mouth gets a lot smaller. Okay. Down here is where we can detect the seasonality. I personally recommend that you always let it just detect it automatically, but you can also set it manually if you want to indicate the number of points that could occur in that seasonal pattern. Okay. Now, on the right-hand side here is our missing data as well as our aggregation, okay? Now, if you're missing a particular month, you got two options. Okay, you can either use interpolation, which is kind of like a weighted average, or you can just say, hey, if I'm missing points, just make them zeros. You know, so if you're missing June, July, instead of kind of interpolating, you know, the prior and future months, just make them zeros. Okay, I recommend that you keep that on interpolation. Aggregation, so what happens if you got more than one June, more than one July? What does that potentially look like? Well, you have a couple of different ways of interpreting that. You could just take all those different things, average them together, and just use that average. You could add them. You can get the median. You can get the min, the max. Or you could just do other things with it. Generally, I just recommend you don't have duplicates. But if you do, hit that average, and that will include, you know, and average them together. Let's go ahead and put our confidence interval back to 95%. Let's go ahead and include our forecast statistics, and let's click Create. And what it's going to do is it's going to create a new, check this out, a new spreadsheet for you. And it's going to even give you that little graph. And if we make it a little bit bigger here, we could see our confidence ratings, you know, our upper line and our lower line. You shouldn't think of it this way because it doesn't specifically mean that. But think of your top line as like best case scenario. Your bottom line is worst case scenario. That thick middle line is like most likely scenario. But, you know, you're going to fall somewhere within it. And this chart will be kind of useful to kind of see where those statistics and where those, in this case, revenue figures might lie. Now, if we scroll down here in our table, you'll notice that starting in January of 2021, our historical data stops and our new data kind of picks up. So for 131, we can see here, here's our forecast sales of 1,922,222. Okay, and if we see the lower or the worst case scenario, that'd be 1.8 million. And if we see our best case scenario, it'd be 1.9 million. And we have a 95% chance that our revenue will fall somewhere between our upper and lower confidence ratings. So it's a kind of an imperfect science. It's not always going to be 100% correct. Obviously, there could be a massive issue, you know, a worldwide pandemic as an example here. But you know, kind of using this, we can get a general sense of what could occur in this business for future periods. And I like to say it's a crystal ball. It's a fuzzy picture of what you could potentially expect in the future. So if you are looking to do kind of some changes you know, in your business, you want to kind of maybe forecast what could occur in the future, this is a great way of kind of getting a sense of generally what to expect inside of your organization. Alrighty, so let's go ahead and take a look at some kind of just general miscellaneous improvements that have been added to Excel that I think are pretty nifty that you should at least be familiar with. Alrighty, so I'm gonna go ahead and close this one here and let's go ahead and take a look at some of our other sample workbooks, again, that are provided if you purchase our podcast for today and you purchase the exam. Alrighty, so we're going to look here at figure 3-4, deselecting cells and some of the other miscellaneous improvements. Okay, well, starting in version 17.12 of Excel, they added a new feature that's pretty hefty that allows you to be able to deselect cells as well as to select non-contiguous regions inside of Excel. Believe it or not, you could not previously do this, which is really, really, really useful. Okay. Now, what this allows us to do is that we can, for example, select, let's say, the values that we have here, and then holding either shift or control, I can actually unselect specific values if I don't want them in my selection. So if you accidentally selected too many things, you can unselect those now by just holding down the control key and then deselecting the values that you don't want. Likewise, if you've selected something and you want to deselect a larger range of contiguous cells, if you hold down the shift key, you can go ahead and deselect those as well. And it will, for example, allow you to get to a much tighter range of things that you have selected. Now, there are some weirdness with respect to copying and pasting, especially kind of like when you've got non-contiguous regions. And you've got non-contiguous cells selected. Like, for example, it won't work where I select multiple and then deselect individual cells themselves. But one of the cool things that you could do now is that you can also unselect whole columns for something and then copy and paste non-contiguous regions. So in this case, I have selected columns A through G here. And let's just say, for example, I actually want to maybe just get out the order date. Well, I can go ahead and deselect column C by holding down the control key. And then I can control C, okay, copy this, and I can come over here and I can now paste that non-contiguous region into a separate selection inside of Excel. Previously, in order to be able to do this, I had to do it in two different operations. I had to select the stuff that I wanted, skip over the stuff I didn't, and then reselect the things that I did want again. Okay, but by using this, we can now select non-contiguous regions inside of Excel. It either really kind of has to be all the cells or none of the cells. You can't individually unselect specific cells and still copy and paste it, but you can do this with all columns and all rows. So in this case, I've done this with columns. Now we've done this with rows. And if we see here that our SAB and our Warsaw Sports, the first one, are no longer selected. So that's kind of a really kind of cool way of being able to be a little bit more effective and a little bit more precision oriented with respect to your copy and paste operations. Okay. Now, the next kind of miscellaneous improvement, let's just go ahead and close our forecasting, there we go, that I want to bring your awareness is auto saving. And I love this particular feature and function for Office 365. Okay. Now, if you're, for example, saving your documents in OneDrive, OneDrive for Business, or SharePoint, you get this new kind of really cool auto save feature. Okay. And this will automatically save the changes as you work with them inside of your workbook. And it also brings, for example, real-time editing and in collaboration and other stuff. But as long as you're saving in OneDrive or OneDrive for Business, you actually don't have to save your files anymore. And it will automatically save those changes for you. And if you happen to be using collaboration and real-time sharing, it will go ahead and share those changes with other people. So it's really kind of cool. Now, let me go ahead and demonstrate this. Notice we do not have autosave on. You can always indicate whether or not you've got autosave on, because if you look where your autosave button is, which is usually in the top left corner, okay, you'll see that autosave is currently turned off. Now, if I turn this on, it's going to tell me I need to save this either in SharePoint or OneDrive. Okay, let's just go ahead and save this in our OneDrive. And once we do so, okay, it's going to upload a copy of it. Personally, what I usually end up doing is I save almost everything inside of SharePoint, okay? And then I'll just open it from SharePoint. But now, once it's saved inside of either SharePoint, OneDrive for Business, or for your normal OneDrive, you'll see that automatic saving is on, and it will keep keystroke by keystroke changes, okay, inside of this workbook, and I never have to save it again. Okay. Now, what's also kind of cool about this is that you also get some pretty cool revision history with this as well. So if we, for example, we go and we look at, and let's go ahead and take a look at our OneDrive. Okay. So here is our file. Okay. Right here that we've just gone ahead and saved. And if we right click on this particular file, and you'll see there's an option here that says view history. Okay, if we scroll down a little bit more, we'll see this option that says view history. And it's going to keep major versions of your document all in sync so that if you ever, for example, have to go back and revert back to a prior version of this, you can. And it just takes care of all of this automatically. There's really kind of nothing for you to kind of think about, which, again, I really like because this will allow us to keep a version history of what we are looking for. And if we happen to make a major change that corrupts the workbook, and darn it, we forgot to create a new version of that, well, guess what? Because it's saved in SharePoint or OneDrive, we can always go back and get that prior version automatically. So that is something that we always have available to us that is kind of really cool. Additionally, once it's inside of SharePoint or OneDrive, if we come up here to the upper right-hand corner, we can also share this out very easily with other people in our team. And they can also be able to edit this, and we can all easily kind of collaborate on this particular document. I could share it out with just individuals inside of my company. I could share it out with people on my specific team. Heck, I could even share it out with clients, and we could be able to collaborate and communicate on this file automatically. Okay, so kind of cool in terms of what you could do with this. And I will tell you, the real-time sharing and collaboration of this, I find to be quite useful. Okay, the next feature and function I wanted to bring your attention to is the insert link functionality. One of the cool things that I really like to do with inside of Excel, especially for really big workbooks, is I like to create a table of contents. And I'll usually make it my first worksheet here. We'll call it talk. Okay, talk, table of contents. And you can create an Excel workbook that can link out to other stuff. Okay, so I can come up here to cell A1 or any of these other cells. Instead of putting in a value or a formula, I can come over here to the insert menu. And from the insert menu, on the right-hand side, under the links work group, this is going to be where I can go ahead and point it to another worksheet if I wanted to, or a Word file or a PowerPoint presentation or anything else that I might like. As an example, we can go ahead and select link and let's say Format Painter, okay? And in doing so, it creates a link to that particular file. Even this particular link is not even on my local computer. It's up at SharePoint. And I can, in one click then, be able to access that file, be able to open that file, and be able to go to that particular file, which is pretty nifty. Just give it a second here. You can see that it's opening up SharePoint. And then from there, we'd be able to operate and get into that file as well. So the inserts, it's going to allow us to point to a new a file that we've recently worked with. And if we just click the insert button, this is going to be where we can choose to get a little bit more control over this. We can point it to a particular existing file or web page. We can also, for example, point it to something in our document, and we can also point it to an email. You know, one of the cool things about this, let's say, for example, we wanted to point it to something in our file, okay, like another worksheet. Well, we can do that as well. And when we click that, it could take us to that worksheet that we happen to be working with. So I find that to be a really, really kind of useful way of kind of creating some organization inside of my workbook, either to other worksheets, other workbooks, or to websites or to other files. Now, the last thing I want to draw your attention to for kind of miscellaneous new features inside of Excel, if we kind of come up here to the file menu, and from the file menu, and we come over here and we select open. One of the cool things that they've added with this is that they have added this ability to see what has been shared with you. From the file open menu, you'll see the shared with me button. And if I click this, this would be where I would see any of the files, regardless of where they happen to be coming from inside of our organization, that are shared explicitly to me. And so it's a great way of being able to see what files are currently available to you. You know, that might be coming from other people. Alrighty, let's go ahead and have our first review question. Okay, so which Excel feature will help forecast trends based on historical data that includes seasonality? Alrighty, is it XLOOKUP? No, it is not, but we'll take a look at that here in a moment. Is it dynamic arrays? Yeah, I guess you could kind of do it. Is it stock history? No, but that could be useful maybe to get data to forecast stock prices in the future. The correct answer here, of course, is our forecast ETS as well as our forecast sheet functions. Alrighty, so if you ever need to do any sort of forecasting, that is a great way of being able to take historical data and then be able to get some historical context of what's going on in the future. Alrighty, so for our next feature that we're going to take a look at, we're going to take a look at the stock history function that was recently added to Excel. Now, the stock feature, stocks or financial information is something that we're using quite often, especially if we're doing any sort of, you know, like let's say portfolio analysis, or we're doing, you know, fair market value calculation for our balance sheet. And we want to know, like, you know, what is the current price of maybe some securities that we happen to be holding. And there's a couple of different ways that we can get access to this financial data that can be very useful. In a prior version of this podcast, we, for example, went up here to the data tab and we looked at the stock data type, which is pretty cool, and it'll add information, but it doesn't really, for example, like it adds information at that point in time. Often, what we need is historical information where we want to see not only like what it is at the moment, but then also kind of get the history so that we can maybe figure out fair market value at the period ending date. Okay, well, that's where the stock history function comes in. With the stock history function, this allows us to be able to go and get historical stock prices by just providing a couple of variables. And we can get a single date. We can also get a range of dates. We can get, for example, the daily, weekly, or monthly intervals for something. And it's very simple. Okay. Now, in our first example here, we're looking at the share price of Microsoft. And we're only going to be using two arguments, the ticker symbol and then the specific date that we want to get. Okay, so I'm going to come down over here and I'm going to go ahead and say, you know what, for today, I want to go ahead and get the stock price for today. So we're going to go ahead and say the stock is going to be NSFT, okay? And then our start date for this, we're going to go ahead and say it is 07/09/2021, like this. All right, so we click this. That little busy tells me that it's going to get the price at the moment. Oops, let's see, did I put that in the wrong? MSFT, let's see. Let's try, maybe it is this. Let's try that one more time. I don't know why it's barking. Let's see, let's try that one more time. Let's pull this down. Oh, you know what? I know why. Okay. We'll try that one more time. Equals stock history. Okay. And we're going to go ahead and do MSFT. Okay. We're always using double quotes anytime that we're dealing with text. So we're going to ensure that Excel treats it like text. 09/21 like this. And hopefully that will work. Now let's see what's going on. All right, let's try this. Just copy this down here. I'm sure I'm doing something simple. All right, let's try that one more time. I don't know why it's not liking my formula compared to that other one. I think it might have to do with the way I was putting it, the date here. But let's just go ahead and change this. Oh, you know what? It's because of the, I was putting in an historical date. That's why. Okay, let's put it in. Let's go ahead and just put it into yesterday. There we go. Duh. I mean, stock history, I guess that would make sense here. Okay, but we're doing it live, folks, you know, so you get it as I figure it out. And so we can see here that we're getting our historical information here. Again, always use a date in the past. Okay, so we can see here we're getting it for the 8th. You know, and if we go ahead and we put in a different date, let's just go ahead and say the 8th, but let's look back in 2019 as an example here, we can go ahead and we can see that in 2019 it was 136.96. Man, as with any of these companies, I wish I had purchased more of it. Let's just say and see what it looked like in 1999. Okay, wow, look at that, $46 for 1999. So we could put in a single value. We can also put in multiple values too. So let's say, for example, we want to put in a end date, you know, and we want to get it for a particular range of time, okay? So let's just say, for example, we want to get it for the whole month of June for 2020, okay? So we're going to go ahead and put in our start date of July 1st, 2020. We're going to go ahead and put in our end date like this. Okay, we're going to go ahead and hit that. And that gets us that historical price for that entire month of June. So if we wanted to create a calculation here, we could very easily do so. Now, there are some additional options that we could put inside of this that are pretty useful. So as I've already shown you, we've got our start date, we've got our end date. Okay, we have our interval. Now, an interval will allow us to be able to get something at particular intervals. By default, it will go to daily, but we could also do it weekly or monthly by just adding an additional parameter. So if we do a zero here, which is the default option, that gets us that daily. If we wanted to do it weekly, we would just do a one. Okay, and that gets us by week. And if we went ahead and we did it with a two, we'll just, as you would expect here, just get a single price at the beginning of that period. Now, if we, for example, take this out, to the end of, let's say, all the way to this year, by month, as you would expect, we would get it by month in this particular instance. Okay, so this is a great way of kind of being able to quickly and automatically summarize it. Now, we can also do our headers, whether or not they should be included. So if, like if we just wanted to do just our raw data, okay, if we just put it at zero here, notice our header row, okay, notice our header row goes away. Let's unhide those cells. There we go. Notice our header row goes away here. Now, if we wanted our header row, we could, again, that's by default. We could just go ahead and select that. Notice that pops up here. Okay, now we can also get additional information back as well. Okay, so by default, we're just getting our closing price. We could also, for example, add additional information with this as well. So we could, for example, get the close price, the open price, the high price, the low price, as well as the volume. And so as an example here, we just add the additional parameters that we want to get those here. So if we add a 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, we'll get those additional options listed. If we take our 4 and 5 out as an example here, notice our low and our volume go away. Now, this is a good example of a spill formula in the sense that it will automatically create the additional values as needed. If I happen to put a value in the middle of it, like I just did here, notice we get that spill error and it will not be able to calculate it. We can get rid of this by just go ahead and selecting this select obtrusive cells, delete it, and that will come back. But just realize this is a good example of what we call a dynamic array formula that needs room to work. And often they will go down and they will go to the right. So you're free to put data above it. You're free to put data to the left of it. But when you're working with a dynamic array formula like this, definitely go ahead and make sure that the data has enough space to go down and across to the right. So that is a little of the stock history. And that's a way that we can, for example, go and get historical information for a particular stock. Now, by default, it's going to go to whatever the major market for a particular security would be. So as an example here, like for Microsoft, it's going to the NASDAQ. If a security happens to be traded on multiple, you're going to want to be on multiple exchanges. You're going to want to be very specific about which ticker symbol you're using to ensure that, you know, if you wanted to get it for something else, you could. And I'm not 100% sure if it would go outside of the major like indices. Like, you know, for example, like I know Microsoft's traded on 3 or 4 different exchanges around the world. But I will point out one of the cool things you can do. Let's say, for example, we wanted to use the stock data type. So if we come over here to the data type and then select stocks, okay, notice it's going to go ahead and convert this into the stock data type, okay. It will give you the ability, for example, to select a different exchange. So I'm not 100% sure if the stock history will do this, but I know if you needed to get it on a different exchange, this would be the way that you would do it. So if we wanted to get, for example, get it on the Chilean stock exchange, well, that's how we would get it here. Okay. Alrighty. So for our next feature and function that we're going to look up here, let's go ahead and take a look at a newer way of doing lookup formulas, which is using the XLOOKUP function. Alrighty. Now, XLOOKUP is a way that we can go ahead and we can do lookups inside of Excel. So what we have here is we have a listing of our corporate data. Let's just say these are customers as an example here. And I want to take a key, in this particular case, an employee ID. And from that, customer ID. And let's just say, for example, I want to go, let's adjust this right here. And I want to get, for example, the email. And I want to get maybe the title of that particular person. Okay, well, there are three different ways that we can do lookups inside of Excel. The first is the one that we've always used, which is VLOOKUP, okay? The second is index and match, and the third is going to be XLOOKUP. Now, VLOOKUP is great because it's simple, it's effective, a lot of us have examples and familiarity with it as well, okay? Index and match, I personally like this. It's a great tool because it's very specific. It's like a laser focus in terms of, you know, trying to find a specific value, and you could be very granular with where and how it looks. Okay, but it's a little complicated in terms of writing. Well, now we've got this third option, which is XLOOKUP. XLOOKUP gives us the ability, for example, to be able to get really granular with how we choose, but it's not as cumbersome as writing index and match. Index and match, for example, is a what we call a compound formula. It's actually two different formulas. You have match and you have index. Match goes and finds a specific value and returns a row number, and then index goes to a row number and gets a specific value. But a lot of people have always had issues with respect to kind of writing that. And they've, you know, a lot of folks, for example, have issues in terms of getting the formula to look up correctly. Okay. Well, it's very powerful, but difficult to use. Okay. VLOOKUP is simple to use, but it's not really powerful. One of the biggest issues with VLOOKUP is that whatever you're looking up has to be the leftmost column of the array of whatever you're looking up to. In this particular example here, we have ID. And if ID was not on the left-hand side, if it was kind of in the middle or on the right, well, unfortunately, VLOOKUP wouldn't work because VLOOKUP can only look left. It starts left and then it'll go to whatever data is the right. Okay, index and match doesn't have that. Well, now we've got a new formula, okay? That new formula that we have is XLOOKUP. And with XLOOKUP, we get the features and functions of index and match that I love with the ease of use of VLOOKUP. Alrighty. Now, this is going to be amplified by the fact that we're using tables, and tables just make writing all sorts of formulas faster, easier than not using them. And you could use a table function anywhere that formulas can be used. So it's completely universal across the entire platform. All right. So we've got our customer ID here, 1. And let's say I want to go and I want to find some information about customer ID 1. And I want to get their email using XLOOKUP. Well, we will go ahead and do equals XLOOKUP, okay? And the value we want to look up here is going to be in B2, okay? The next is going to be the lookup array, okay? So where are we going to look up B2 to? Well, in this particular case, it's going to be in it's going to be over here into this ID, okay? Now, as long as we are using good table names, it's going to be pretty simple. What we want to use is tell it to go to the customer table and then use the column of ID. Okay. So we're going to go ahead and do XLOOKUP. Okay. Look up this value here. And where are we going to look it up? We're going to look it up to the customer table. Okay. Notice how it highlights everything here. Okay. We're going to tell it specifically to look at the ID column. Okay. Anytime we're using table references, we're always using square brackets. So we use an open square bracket to say ID. Okay. The next is, what do we want to get back? Well, in this case, I want to get their email. So I'm going to say, go to the customer table again and get the email for that particular ID. Now, we could be done just with this. There are 3 optional values: what to do if it doesn't find something, what type of match, and then what type of search. But let's just go ahead and end it here. Okay. And in doing so, we get back that particular email of that particular user. So if we put in ID 500, guess what? We get that email for that particular person. Let's go ahead and write it a few more times. Let's come over here to our title, and we're going to do the same thing. We're going to say equals XLOOKUP. Okay, look up value B2, go to the customer table, look in the ID column. Okay, and let's go say we want to get back our customer, and in this case, we want to get back their title, like this. Now, let's add another value here, another one of the arguments. Now, one of the really cool things about XLOOKUP is that it combines not only VLOOKUP and index and match, but it also adds an if error. What happens, for example, if you're going to go look up something and the value isn't there? Well, in a traditional lookup, you get a pound NA, meaning not applicable. It's not listed. Well, with XLOOKUP, we don't have to write another formula to wrap around that lookup. We instead, for example, could just do it right here as this 4th argument. And we're going to go ahead and say not in list. Okay. Now, we happen to get our title listed here, but if we put in customer ID 1001, notice that with that argument, we get not in list as an error message. But if we don't list that, we get pound NA. Now, this could be another formula, so you could write another formula in there. So if you wanted to look up to a second or even potentially third, or you could just use double quotes like this and it will give you no value, just showing that it's indicated. But that's a heck of a lot nicer than just pound and A. Now, our fifth and sixth argument in here are going to be what to look up and how to search. So let's go ahead and put this back to a correct value. Let's just say value 3. And let's go ahead and take a look. Okay, so we can go ahead and say look up value B2, look it up to the customer table, specifically look in the ID column. I want you to get back the location, so we're gonna go ahead and say the customer table. Okay, we're gonna look at the location column. Okay, for our not if found, we're just gonna go ahead and do double quotes. And then we have two other search options here. We have the match mode and then the search mode. Now, with this, we can either get an exact match, which would be the equivalent of a VLOOKUP doing a false. Okay, so if we've ever wanted to, for example, only get an exact match, an exact match only, we can just say false. Or we could put in a -1, a 1, or a 2. Okay, this gets the exact match or the lowest, the smallest item. Okay, a +1 gets us an exact match or the largest or the last item in the list. And a -2 would get us the wild card. We're going to say we want an exact match, which would be the equivalent of a false in a VLOOKUP or a 0 in a match function. The next is how to search. +1 starts at the top and goes to the bottom. A -1 starts at the bottom and goes to the search. And then we can also use 2 and -2, binary search, which will sort it dynamically and then return that value. Okay, so we can just go ahead and put a 1 in here, and sure enough, it returns that value. So the takeaway from XLOOKUP is that it is an incredibly granular way of getting control over your lookup inside of Excel, far more than what you would get with either VLOOKUP or index and match. And it's quickly become my favorite way of doing searching inside of Excel. Now, the downside of this is the fact that it is an Office 365 only feature and function. So if you're, for example, using this and you have a colleague that doesn't have Office 365, when they go to run this, it's not going to run for them, you know? So you definitely only want to be using this with people inside your organization that have access to Office 365 and a new version of Excel. If you still want a very powerful lookup, okay, but more than what you get with VLOOKUP, well, your best next option would be used index and match. This is a good option, but it is only going to work if everybody's using Office 365. You start sharing a workbook with other people, unfortunately, they're going to run into issues and it's not going to work well for them because they're not going to have access to that particular formula. All righty, let's go ahead and have our next review question. All righty, so what is a helpful feature if you use the autosave function? Okay, is it showing version history? You betcha. You absolutely get access to that when you save inside of 365, either OneDrive or SharePoint. Is it restoring from previous versions? Absolutely. Is it automatically saving your changes? You betcha. The correct answer here is all of the above. So if you happen to be using the autosave feature with inside of Excel, you can get your history, see it, look at the different changes, you can restore to a prior version, and it'll even save your work automatically for you. How cool is that? And it's quickly become one of my favorite features and functions inside of Excel. All right, so the last feature function that we want to take a look at today is going to be dynamic array formulas. And there's several of them, but we're going to look at 3. It's going to be unique, as well as sort, as well as filter. Now, these are really useful when you want to be able to programmatically sort a list using a function, okay? So in this particular list here, we can see that we've got a listing of our fruit, okay? Now, we've always, for example, been able to come to a particular list, come up here to the data tab, go ahead and hit A to Z, and it will put that into that particular order. Okay. Likewise, we've always, for example, been able to do this through sort, and we've always been able to sort and put it into that particular order as well. Okay. And we've always been able to, for example, filter and filter to a particular item or list of items as well. Okay. So this has always been listed here. Now, what these features, what sort, filter, and unique does is it gives us the ability to be able to point a function at a particular list of stuff and then either sort it, get the unique values, or filter that data. Okay, so we've got a listing of different fruits here, and let's just say I wanted to get a unique listing of just the items here so that apples don't appear twice or cherries don't appear twice, but rather just a list of the unique values in that particular array. Well, we're going to go ahead and do equals unique. Okay, and we're going to go ahead and point it at a listing here. Now, we have one mandatory, which is the array, but then we have two additional ones by column and whether or not it should exactly appear once. Okay, so if we, for example, just leave it alone with just that mandatory listing, guess what? We end up with just a listing of that particular item. Okay, of those particular items in that list. Now, if we have additional columns, we could say, well, how do you want to sort it to? Maybe, for example, you've got a listing of employees by position and you just want to get a listing of the positions. Well, this is where you could say, hey, I want to choose a specific column. Okay, so you could go ahead and point it at a specific, whether or not it should contain unique columns or if the rows themselves should be unique. Okay, now you also have whether or not it should appear exactly once. So whether or not, for example, you've got duplicates, but then like, let's say all the column A is correct, but then there's some unique values in B or C. Well, a database is a common thing where you get a list, for example, of different products, but what if you have the same product that has two different prices? Well, should you only look at, for example, the name of the product, or should you look at the other data items that go along with it, like the product price or maybe the store location for that item? Well, using this additional parameter here, you could look at those additional columns to determine if, you know, those are uniqueness as well that you want to maybe evaluate as part of your look at the unique values. But programmatically, using a formula now, using the unique function, you can point it at a list and just get those unique values that are presented. Now, we also have two other ones. We have sort and filter. Okay. Now, with the data, we could, for example, programmatically sort things using a formula as well, okay? So over here, we've got a listing of data. This is by salespeople, and then we've got January, February, March, and then the total, okay? And let's just say I wanted to be able to sort this particular data. Well, what I could do is I could point it at an array, okay? In this case, the array is the name of the table, and the name of the table here is called data. And then I could tell it how to sort. In this case, we get a sort index and then a sort order. Now, the sort index is going to be an integer, in this case, 5, okay? That represents the fifth column, okay? So our salesperson is column 1, January is column 2, February is column 3, March is column 4, total is column 5. And if you notice here, we're sorting it by that total row. So if we say to sort, for example, by the salesperson name, we can go ahead and put in a 1, and a 1 here, and then guess what? It now has sorted by that salesperson's name in alpha order. If we wanted to put it in reverse alpha order, this would be where we would put our sort order. 1 for ascending and a negative 1 for descending. And doing that, we can go ahead and we can see it sorts in that same order, it sorts by that same column, but in reverse order. Now, let's say we wanted to sort by our month of January. Here you go. We can see it's now sorting by January into that ascending order. So all we have to do is have the data, what column we want to sort by, and then also what that particular sort order should be. Now, likewise, we also have the filter button if we wanted to filter down to a particular item, okay? In this particular case, we have our array of data, what data to include, and then what to do if it's potentially empty. Now, the only gotcha here is, for example, looking at how to match the data for sorting. Okay. In this particular case, we'll typically have a parameter. In this case, I've got the name of the salesperson up here in M3. And let's just go ahead and write this particular function. So I'm just going to go ahead and take this out here. And so we're going to go ahead and write equals filter. The data will be what our array is in terms of what I want to include. And then how do I want to filter? What do I want to look at? Well, I want to look at the name of the salesperson. So I would go ahead and say the data, but specifically the salesperson is what I want to filter on. And then I'm going to do an equal sign, and I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to point it up here to M3, where I have the parameter, in this case, of Jones. Okay, I'll put an ending parentheses in here, and that's how I can get just Jones's data. And it's filtering based off of all this, based off of what I've got down here. And so if we select Smith or Robinson, all it's doing is just filtering the data down, you know, for what we've got inside of that data. And it's doing the exact same operation that if we were to go over here to the left-hand side and we were to go ahead and just select Robinson as our example here, it's doing the exact same thing. It's just filtering down just to that one person listed. But it's a way that we can be able to filter our data with not in the UI, but maybe to filter for to pass to another formula, for that example. So it's a great way of being able to kind of take a set of data, just pull the unique values out, or to sort it, or to filter it for other operations that we'd like to do inside of Excel that we've only previously been able to do through the UI functions and formulas up here in the data tab. So the stuff that we see listed up here, now we could do through formulas, and that's just another tool in your IT tool belt for the stuff that you might need to use in the future. Alrighty, folks, that does bring us to the end of our podcast today. Let's go ahead and have our final review question, and then we're going to go ahead and wrap up. Okay, so what new feature is available in the subscription version of Office? Okay, is it Forecast ETS? Nope. Thankfully, that is available in all recent versions of Office. That's not tied specifically just to Office 365. Okay. However, dynamic arrays are tied to 365. The stock history is tied to 365. And XLOOKUP is tied to 365. I totally think there's going to come a time in the very near future where, you know, in order to be able to access any of these advanced features going forward with Microsoft, I think there's a very near time, good possibility in the near future that you're going to have 365, that perpetual license will no longer be something that you can use, because they're going to start feature locking even more stuff to only 365 subscribers. Alrighty. So today we took a look at some really cool new features and functions inside of Excel. We looked at the stock history functionality. We looked at the sorting and filtering functionality using dynamic arrays, which are fantastic for data sets that grow. Okay. We looked at some of the new 365 collaborative features around auto saving and sharing as well. Okay, we even looked about a new way of doing lookups using XLOOKUP, which brings the ease of use of VLOOKUP with the features and power of index and match all in a nice tidy wrapper that's much easier to use. In future editions of this course and podcast, we're going to go ahead and look at even more new features and functions for Excel, giving you all the information necessary to be effective and powerful inside of your career. How cool is that? Now, as a reminder, if you're a financial professional, you can earn credits for watching or listening to the CPE Today podcast. It's super simple. After watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com. Use course code EXB2. Take a short 5-question quiz, and you will be well on your way to maintaining your professional licensing and getting enough credits to keep that license active. Besides our podcast, we've got hundreds of other courses that are available. So check us out if you need accounting, audit, or tax, or anything else. All different cool types of courses to pique your interest. If you like our content, please consider following us on social media. We'd love to know what you think. On almost all social media platforms, you can find us as @CPEToday. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and much more. And as a reminder, you can always listen to the CPE Today podcast on your schedule. We broadcast live twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific. But you can also download the podcast on the platform of your choosing, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. It is my absolute pleasure being with you here today. And I'll see you back at the office the next time around. Take care.